can. So I've been a director of music cantor at my entire career, and I've been 22 years with the Lutherans. So at one point I was getting a little burned out, and I was talking about music therapy to a friend, and he's the one who, he was a psychologist, and he said, "I've heard of therapeutic music," and so that is what sparked it for me. And I thought, well, I've got to learn to play the harp if I'm going to do this. So if you're a keyboard player, the harp is usually a fairly easy transfer because the strings are arranged just like the white keys on a piano. So I took some lessons, and here I am. So I was born and I still live in Fort Worth, Texas, and I play harp and Native American flutes, primarily harp, in our county hospital. And I play in all departments, from inside the operating room to NICU to emergency, cancer, psych, or the whole bit. Every place it's there. But we even, since it's the county hospital, we have the county medical prison there, and I play in there sometimes too. So it's become my passion. I'm also an employee of VITAS Hospice, so I play there occasionally, but I play in the hospital a lot more than I do in hospice. So I wanted to start today by reading two scriptures to sort of, it's my excuse for what I do, and it's I can say it's biblical. And I just came across these not all that long ago. There's a text that I love in Revelation 5:8, and it says, "When he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell before the Lamb, each holding a harp and golden vials full of fragrance, which are the prayers of the saints." And I'm also a certified aromatherapist, so I thought that gives me credit for what I do. If these 24 elders each had a harp and a vial of oil or incense or odor, it says, then I'm good to go. So the other one that I was just, I read this but years ago, and today I was talking with Eric Gronberg. You all met Kendra Moan. She spoke, or I'm assuming most of you did. Her husband is the bishop of our synod, and he was telling me, he said, "Well, how about the Paul text from 2 Corinthians? So I said, "No, I haven't thought about that, or it's gone out of my mind." So it says, "But thanks be to God, who in Christ always leads us in triumphal procession and through us spreads in every place the fragrance that comes from knowing him. For we are the aroma of Christ to God among those who are being saved and among those who are perishing. To the one a fragrance from death to death, to the other a fragrance from life to life." So I do the harp and I do essential oils. And I was telling him one of the things that I personally miss from Protestant worship services is we have all of the senses in our services except smell. We've eliminated that one. And the Catholics and some Episcopalians use incense, and I've played for the Episcopalians many years ago, and of course there were always wheezing and coughing whenever we brought out the incense. And I thought, well, the oils don't do that because they don't have the same chemical structure, so they're a lot less annoying to some people than burning of incense. So what I wanted to do first is start around an oil as I'm speaking. How many of you have ever played around or messed with essential oils? One, two, three, oh, quite a few of you. Okay. So I am fairly new to this. I got very interested in it a few years ago, and I won't tell you all my path to that. It doesn't matter. But so, of course, being who I am, I'm always trying to learn new things. So I took the course and became certified, and then I just went and did a teaching course. I've never really been interested in the oils physical prop, you know, what they can help you with physically as much as I was interested in what they could do for you emotionally and spiritually and creatively. So I'm going to start around an oil called Clary Sage, which happens to be one of my favorites. And how many of you know this oil, Clary Sage? And before I get started on the oils and the synesthesia, I want to talk about two books. They'll be on the handout, which I'm going to hand out a little bit later. One is called Aromatherapy for the Soul, and one is called Aromatherapy for Healing the Spirit. And you can read in these books and other many other places, and these books are listed on the handout. This oil is good for this. This oil really helps you go deep, and this oil really helps you relax, and this one does that. And, you know, people ask me, and I've asked, how do you know that? Who proves that? Well, it's kind of strange to me that when you read about these oils and you go to all these different sources, even when we're talking on the emotional and spiritual level, there's a lot of similarity. So it's this tradition of thousands of years of what oils, you know, sort of affect you in one way or the other. And it's just like hypnosis. If you don't believe it and you're not interested in it and you're not gonna, then it's not gonna work. But if you have an open mind, I think they can really benefit you spiritually and emotionally. We know they can physically. But just as a reminder to some of you who are not used to smelling out of the bottle, please don't put it right up to your nose, just for sanity's sake, but just, you know, about wave it under your nose about 3 or 4 inches and just inhale that. And I'm going to pass this around and you can just take a smell. It's one of these oils that it's supposed to relax you, but at the same time it has a mental uplift. And also, it's supposed to help you open your mind to new things and to wisdom. So we're going to be smelling some other things in a minute. But first, I thought I would start this section. As you're smelling that oil, I'm going to play the piece. It is on my CD. It's the first one. And it's called Clary Sage. And I wrote, or I never write anything, it's all improvised, but this oil inspired this music along with our lead chaplain. She was not our lead chaplain, and she came and told me one day that she was leaving because her parents were very ill and they lived in another state. And so both Chaplain Lee, now she's back and she's our lead chaplain, and I'm so happy about that. But the oil and Chaplain Leanne are what inspired this piece. And instead of sitting down, I actually think I'll sort of walk around, because this big room, it does sort of swallow the little harp. But I just want to walk around and play this Clary Sage, and then we're going to talk about synesthesia and how we can come up with some creative ideas for improvising or composing, etc. Okay, so that's Clary Sage. Has the bottle made its way around? Oh, it's still coming. Okay. I have a couple of questions, and the first one is, how many of you in here are musicians, or you play an instrument of some, any instrument, even professionally, amateur, it doesn't matter. Okay, quite a few of you. How many of you play the harp? I know there's one other person here. Anybody else? Okay, there's two of us. So I'm glad to see so many musicians, although these ideas could help you, I think, in writing or poetry, or they could help you in any creative endeavor. So my next question is, how many of you, first question of this section, of these two is, how many of you know what synesthesia is? Okay. And how many of you you consider yourself that you have this? Okay, one, two, anybody else? Okay, so let me read a definition of synesthesia for you. The production of a sense impression relating to one sense or part of the body by stimulation of another sense or part of the body. So there are some people who, when they see numbers, number one is always, let's say, red. Anytime they see the number one, it's always red in their head. And two is yellow, or three. And some people, when they taste things, they feel like a banana tastes like a triangle. So it's these weird things, and for a long time, for decades, the doctors and scientists thought this was just, these people were just making this up, and they were kind of strange, and it wasn't a real thing. But now, of course, they've changed their mind. There are some people who really are born this way. So would you mind sharing some of the, I don't think they gave me, this mic I know is not a speaking mic. It's a different kind of mic for the musical instrument. So I'll walk over here. Would you mind sharing sort of what you...
Just what you're describing with the numbers. Mm-hmm. One is always red, and two is always yellow.
And two is what?
Yellow.
And how about three? Does it have a color?
Three is sometimes orange. Four is always blue.
Wow.
And when I play music, I associate music with colors. Mm-hmm. I don't read notes very well, but I memorize a song based on associating it with colors.
Okay. All right. Let's hear it. Didn't you raise your hand?
I kind of did like a thing, because like I have an experience where I haven't given enough thought to really understand it, but I have like an experience where like I'll experience like a stimulus, like you were saying, and like I'll see it as like a color or like a swirl of colors, and like the experience will be like a light, or like in my mind I see it as like a color happening. So I haven't really explored it, but I just always been like, that's kind of, my processing on that is kind of weird, or,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's always been kind of weird.
Well, thanks for sharing. Okay, anybody else have an experience similar that they want to, or even different? So, I have read that that all of us are born, you know, when we're in the womb, that our senses are all mixed up, but that as we develop, they sort of separate. And I don't know how this works, and I'm not interested in that anyway, so because that's another field, but that they separate, but that for some people, that separation doesn't, you know, of maybe two of the senses doesn't fully separate, and that's why this happens. So I don't consider that I have the real technical definition of the word, except for when you close your eyes, I think most people see just darkness. And you might see, try it, close your eyes and see. When I close my eyes, I see color. How many of you see darkness? Oh, just sort of mostly black when you close your eyes. And I think that's kind of typical. But how many of you see color when you close your eyes? Okay, so that's a type, I think it's sort of a type of what we're talking about. When I smell certain fragrances or certain oils, it just makes me think of a melody sometimes. So I kind of have, I don't have the true, you know, that true definition, but I have a little bit of it. So what we're here today to do primarily is to talk about how different senses can help you create. I do this with music on the harp, but you might do it, of course, with your instrument, or you might do it with something else, like your poetry, if you write poetry, or let's hear some of the different things that you do that creatively. So I know a lot of us do more than one thing, but again, raise your hand if you play a musical instrument. Let me see those of you. Okay, and let's just see. So just shout out what you play. Somebody. Guitar, piano, voice, flute. Okay, yes. Harmonica. Ukulele. Yes, I've heard a lot of ukuleles around here at Holden. Okay, and how about others? What is the creative thing that you enjoy doing? Just shout it out.
Art.
What kind of art? Uh-huh. Okay. Who said that? Collage, yeah. You know, I went to this thing in Taos in May for this aromatherapy for the soul class, and it was a week long, it was extremely intense, and we had to do a giant collage of ourselves. We had to draw the outline of our body on paper that they had taped together, and then we had to fill it in over the week. And that, because I can't draw worth anything, but this was something really besides music that I felt, this is fun. I could do this, you know, so. Anybody else? Woodworking. Yes. Banner, you design and make banners. Yes. Thinking about what? Math. Wow, okay. Math scares me. They say musicians are supposed to be, have a lot of, and you know, I did math, but I just didn't like it, you know. But so that's great to hear somebody that's creative with math. Anybody else? Okay. So what I'm gonna do now is we're gonna start delving in, and I really want your feedback. I'm going to start handing this out. I hope I have enough. She said she would make more. I have, did she put a good? I have 39 here. Oh, I'll give you one and then I'll a woman who was here yesterday in my session said, I've got to leave Holden tomorrow, but could I have your, so just start passing these around, please. I think there's plenty. And if there's extras, you can, just leave them on the end of a seat and I'll get them later. So everybody has one? You don't need to share, really. I've got plenty, so here you go. If you want one. Okay. I told the woman, I said, well, without the explanation, I don't know if it'll make sense. It might not. But this is just what I've come up with. And I thought, you know, some people might be afraid of chakras. I don't, I've just recently started learning about chakras. I do meditation. And so, but I decided it doesn't matter if you believe or if you have negative feelings about that kind of thing. It's just, to me, a way of having another way of creating. So how many of you in the room don't know what chakras are? Okay, So these are in Eastern philosophy, these are places in the body that are energy centers. And at first, you know, when I first read about it, I thought, okay, well, that's, I don't know if I believe that or not. But the more I read it, it made sense. And, you know, acupuncture, we all know that that acupuncture works, and it's these energy centers and things. So to me, this started making more sense that, okay, yeah, there might be something to this. Do I really study the chakras and think about them all the time? I think about them far more than I used to, but it's not really something that I delve into and study. But at the same time, it gave me sort of a base for more creation. So what I have done here is shown the root. It sort of tells you where that energy center, and it goes right up from sort of your tailbone area in the center of the body, right up through the center, right up through your head, basically. So if you start at the root and you move up, and you can read what the key words and the examples. The essential oil bit is the place where I've only put a few, but there are certain oils, for example, vetiver for the root. Vetiver is taken from a root. Frankincense is not taken from a root. It's taken from the resin of a tree. But these oils that are very grounding. And in other words, some oils like jasmine sort of are floral, and they're sort of effervescent, and they sort of are considered more crown area. Whereas some of these, when you smell vetiver, it smells to me, it's one of my favorite oils. It smells like a cellar, a root cellar. It's just that damp, earthy smell. And so when I go about my business of being both a church musician, but primarily in my work as a therapeutic musician, I'm always improvising, because you can't, it wouldn't be feasible. There are some people do it, but I don't know how they do it. And especially in the hospital as big as where I work, where there's several buildings and skywalks and elevators. And so I play that little harp. I used to take a big harp, but this one works very well for me, and I'm always playing, and I'm always trying to find how can I be inspired to come up with new melodies. And on top of that, the lover harp, the strings are, it's only the diatonic scale, so it's only C, D, E, F, G, A, B. You don't have the sharps unless you flip up a lever. So if you don't know the difference between a huge harp and a little harp, the big harp has pedals, and that's how you can play Debussy on a harp, is because your feet are just moving like crazy to create all those, to get all of those accidentals, all the, that are not in the key signature. On a lever harp or an Irish harp, folk harp, it's all the same instrument, basically. If you want to play in the key of E, you need four sharps. So you set your harp with the levers in the key of E, and you stay there. And of course, you can occasionally, obviously, flip levers and get those accidentals. But if you were playing Debussy on a little lever harp, you would be flipping more than you would be playing. So that's why the pedal harp was invented. So it makes it, for some musicians, the lever harp it's too small for them, because they want to be able to play, you know, do all of these things and play Debussy, and it's too confining. But for me, it was just the opposite. The lever harp opened up, because I can do a lot in this container, and it makes me more creative, because I have to, I have the accidentals, but I don't use them all that often within a certain piece. So if you're just playing basically with your seven notes of the scale, then that even adds more. How can I be more creative and when I'm only using most of the time the seven notes of whatever key I'm playing in? Does that make sense? Okay, so all that to say, I was trying to come up with ways being more creative and thinking of new melodies, new ideas. So right now, what I want to do is open up the floor to see what ways, because someone, I'm going to put you on the spot, John, told me at breakfast that he has, I think you said a healing color. So can you tell us more about that? And be thinking, while you're listening, just be thinking of things that you do or things that help you be creative. And even if you've spoken already, if you want to give us more detail, because that mostly this session is about sharing how we can use the senses to inspire other ideas. So tell us more about what you were...
So basically what I've learned, I want to say maybe about... About 10 years ago, I've gone to massage school. So they bring in a lot of modalities in regards to how they go about through healing the body through therapeutic massage. And one of the things that we talked about was colors. And it's different for all folks depending on how they are in tune themselves with colors. So throughout the process of going through school, every time either a hand touches me or if I'm going through the process of massage, you know, when you're massaged, you try to relax, your eyes are closed and what have you, blue would always come up as I'm feeling my body being rubbed and feeling the relaxation and being healed. The color of blue seems to be predominant with me whenever I go through any sort of healing process, be it massage, be it acupuncture, be it whatever. Blue always pops up for me. So I navigate toward that color when things are starting to go awry with me, either spiritually, physically, what have you. I try to go toward a blue color space, I guess you can say, or try to focus on blues to kind of, I guess you say, heal my body or calm myself down, what have you. So that's how that came about.
Okay. Does that resonate with anyone? Does anybody else have a color that, like one particular color that sort of inspires you or calms you? There is a whole other field that I don't know that much about, color therapy, and I haven't really studied it a lot. I have friends that are more into that. But is there anybody else? I mean, I can share something about a color, but I would like to hear from some of you. Or another sense. It doesn't have to be color. Light. Anybody else? Oh, quiet group today. Okay. Well, I can tell you that I have whenever I'm very anxious, sometimes mostly I go to the oils. I keep two or three on my bedside table because I have panic attacks at night. During the day, I'm fine. I don't feel anxious, but when I'm sleeping, sometimes I wake up with a couple of weeks ago, I had it's probably one of the worst ones I've had. So I keep these oils and they really do calm me down. I don't know if it's just the placebo effect. I don't care what it is, it works for me. But another thing that before I discovered the oils that I did, I had a place, and I don't know where it came from, but in my head I would go to it was sort of a bluish green room, and I would just put myself in that room and I would be, you know, very calm, and it would really calm me down. And I can bring it up at any time and I see this room vividly. It's got windows and, but there's not much out there anyway, et cetera. But it's a color thing that really helps calm me down. And then I was so excited when I found a piece by Wayne Gretz. Does anybody know that piano composer, sort of new agey stuff? And he has a piece called The Green Room, and my room is greenish blue, but I learned that piece, and it's one of my favorite pieces there. So let's hear from some more of you about things that inspire you. Senses, I'm trying to keep it especially within the sensory realm, things that inspire you to create in another medium.
Synesthesia, but my daughter does, and she uses music when she does her painting.
Okay.
So the music inspires her to use different colors.
Okay. Did everybody hear that? She said her daughter uses music, and the music inspires her to, the music inspires her painting and gives her ideas to put on the canvas. Okay, does anybody else do that? A lot of people, I think, play music to sometimes as background, sometimes as inspiration. I rarely have music. I'm a musician, but I drove 30 hours to get from my house to Pasco, where my sister lives in Southeast Washington. And I played very little music, because when I hear music, I'm really listening to it, as opposed to, I can't have it as just background. But it is great when, you know, that when it's inspiration or you're thinking about it. Anybody else? Yes and no, because there are certain oils that that are sort of known for calming, within that family, I discovered the first thing, of course, that I couldn't sleep. I'd instantly go to sleep, but then I'd wake up at 2 and couldn't go back. That was my problem. Lavender, and it has to be real lavender. These lavender that's in a spray can from, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond, well, that is not really lavender. It has to be the pure oil that really works. I mean, the spray might work for some people, but it's got a lot of other chemicals and stuff in it. And some people that think they hate lavender, when they smell the pure lavender, it's like, oh, well, that's a nice smell. So that really calms me. But even more than that, that was my first oil, is Roman chamomile. That really calms me down. And you think the tea people drink, I don't drink a lot. I drink a lot of tea, but I don't drink chamomile tea. But a lot of people do at night to help them calm down. But the smell just really calms me down. And the clary sage I use sometimes. Yeah.
I have clary sage and mixed clary sage and lavender.
Yeah. Yeah. Did everybody hear? She uses lavender. She mixes lavender with clary sage to help her calm down. Okay. So I want to hear from some more people about ideas that you have or that you have experienced of things that help you create. It doesn't have to be oils at all. It can be anything. Yes.
It wasn't really creating, but I've been an engineer before the days when everybody had a computer. A lot of the calculations were done manually and with slide rules. Very easy to make mistakes. And I found out if I had a white noise in the background, it helped me concentrate. And then I found it was even better if it was like elevator music, a very calming melody. And, you know, made very few mistakes then.
Wow. Yes.
Just kind of a different sense to think about, but I find movement to be a way that is a creative, can be a force for creativity for me. So I have been a runner for a long time, but then just a few years ago, became trained as a yoga teacher. And so using that as kind of a way to just stimulate new ideas and that sort of thing. So.
Okay, so physical movement, I'm gonna delve a little further into that. So. Physical movement helps you with new ideas. What are some of those new ideas? You mean in
if I'm stuck with something at work or something like that, if I go for a run, a lot of times and I'm sure that's true for a lot of people, but you come back with kind of fresh insight and relaxation and that sort of thing. I guess the same thing for yoga in a different way. Yoga for me is more calming as opposed to idea stimulating, but using that as a way to calm before bed or just to relax and in general to de-stress. So.
Okay, thank you. So if you...
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
I'm kind of keying off of the background music and calculations and yoga. I would guess that background calculation and mistakes are often because what the mind is focusing on is maybe not that the mind wanders. And practicing yoga, quiet, calming kind of music. The idea there is to connect mind and body and to focus on the body. I also used similar background music when I was working in my office, and I think engaging the mind to a certain extent without it overwhelming the mind so that the mind doesn't distract, but you can focus on that connection with body, focus on the calculation, but not get distracted. I find practicing with some younger yoga instructors, the music will be a little more upbeat, and for me, just too distracting.
Okay. You know, I wonder, as you were talking, I was wondering if perhaps if you're working on something that's difficult and your brain maybe gets a little locked up, and maybe the music or the white noise or whatever it is not only distracts, but it helps that other section of the brain, let's say on the left side of the brain, to sort of open and relax because you're not trying to push into it further. So you go somewhere else, let's say maybe on the right side of the brain, relaxes that part of the brain, and then it's like maybe, okay, that's how you solve this problem. Does that make sense? Yes.
But I think I do my best creating in terms of like working through a problem with silence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have more to say about silence in a minute, but I will get to that later. Yes.
So I'm going to add in here classical music and that the Mozart effect. Don Campbell and a number of people have researched on this. And how music can just change our moods so easily. And it moves us from creativity to anxiety. I mean, have you been in a restaurant where they've got these crashing music and you just want to eat really fast and all of a sudden you find yourself eating really fast? Whereas with the slow classical music, a lot of times we calm ourselves down and eat slower and this kind of thing. And then silence, we run into where silence will help us. So I think that's an interesting concept too.
Thank you. Somebody else, yes. I don't think I can get through on this, so I'll come back this way.
Well, I don't know if this idea holds any water or not, but the Mozart effect, I teach kindergarten. And I turn Mozart on and I tell the kids, this is going to make you smarter. You know, if you do math while we have the smart music on, and it's to the point where they ask for it. They say, can we have the smart music on? I also have a really, really nice, it's really expensive, but some lavender hand cream. And they ask for that. And when they feel too tense, they'll come and they'll ask me, can I have lavender? And then I also use sandalwood in the room, and it has an effect. I mean, the days that I forget to turn on the scents or whatever, there is an effect. And when they walk into the room, there is this instant reaction to the scent in the room.
Yes, I've heard of many people that have, I teach 130 children a week. That's part of my work at Trinity. So I do music garden with 100. I sing to the babies from 6 weeks up to 5 years old. And music can really help. I have not used the essential oils. You have to be very careful with essential oils with children that young, but if it's in a hand cream, that would be perfectly safe because it's not the straight oil.
Not allowing.
I'm not surprised. It's too bad. The pure oil I can see because not lavender so much, but some of the other oils you use, you know, you don't even use with children under about 2 years old unless it's mixed really heavily diluted. Anybody else? And if you think of something when I'm talking, just what we can get back to you. So don't be shy.
Hi. So building off of what she said over there with yoga, I've noticed with like if I'm in a class, so I find movement to be something that helps me move through stuff as well. So yeah, and with yoga for me, it's like the repetition, like you're hitting like the same like flow in a class. Like usually you can like somewhat pick up on a flow and know what to expect, and like you kind of just like start to zone into it. But then I also am an instructor, and so I tend to find like that in itself is a way moving through things too, because it's just like it's like almost like an art in itself, and like you're pulling something out of you and instructing a class through it. And with that, I think that sustained tones have helped myself and other people, like singing bowls and things like that, like really find like a relaxed place and a still place, and so they can move through whatever they're working through with a little, you know, more peace, or you know, whatever they find in that.
Thank you. Yes.
Looking at this, I have students that have high needs, trauma, that type of thing, and have really found that cluing into sense, cluing into movement, whether it's yoga, just walking around, also the different colors are important. And studies have proven it. I've read many studies about the different things that how performance is improved overall by using these things ahead of time before they take exams, the relaxation, and it's all about neural bridges and that type of thing is the key thing. The more the mind is open and that you're building bridges, the more permanency is established.
So I have a question for those of you who have mentioned yoga and movement and children. Have you seen, you've all kind of mentioned maybe the calming down effect. Have you noticed or observed that maybe it helps them be more creative when they're calm and they've had this lavender on their hands or the Mozart playing? Have you noticed that then when they do, I'm just wondering if you've observed that, let's say that their next activity sometime in the day would be art. Have you noticed that that helps that or not necessarily? Okay. Oh, yes.
So I think probably one thing I should have mentioned with the running and yoga that is kind of an overlap, and I think people were hitting on this with other things too, is the breath. And how that really, I mean, music relates to that as well. But I work with students with special needs. I'm an occupational therapist, and so I do yoga with some of those students. And I wouldn't necessarily say creativity in the sense of like creating an artwork, you know, piece or something that I see a huge change with. But I would say we see a lot of improved language after we do it, and just that they're in a better place to be in the classroom.
Okay, so now I want us to think, well, before we get to that, somebody mentioned silence, a couple of you, I think, mentioned silence. I know you said, and that is one of the reasons, even though I am director of music, have been, with, you know, director of music at a Lutheran church for 22 years, but sometimes I feel, I was raised Seventh-day Adventist, but I consider myself Lutheran now. However, sometimes I think there's something really special. There must be something special about the Quakers, because just that beautiful silence. And sometimes for me, in my own church where I am the director of music and other places I have visited, the music is always out. It's praising, it's always out there, and it seems that there's very little time for silence in our services, and I would love there to be more silence. But if you've ever noticed that when it says silence between the readings or wherever, and people, you know, after 30 seconds, you can almost feel the uncomfortableness of a lot of us, because we're so used to, we're not used, most of us, to real contemplation or meditation. And as long as somebody's speaking a prayer or music is sounding or the word, but any kind of contemplative thing makes us nervous in public worship, and that disturbs me. And as I said, also, I wish we used more fragrance, because fragrance is a big part of both the Old and New Testament. It's there all through, but we've sort of eliminated it. And I think that happened way back with the Reformation and John Calvin, especially, probably. I haven't given that a lot of thought. I have given it a little thought, because what service that we do, of course, many different settings. It's Tree of Life. Have any of you done Tree of Life by Marty Haugen? So in there, he indicates to play, and he tells you, you know, he gives you an example of what you can play during the preface to the Holy, Holy, and all through that Eucharistic prayer. So I'm playing. So I did it. I followed what he said, and there were so many people that came up to me afterwards and loved that. But I wasn't used to doing that. So I still don't do it often at my church, and I haven't really thought about why or how, but I know that when I did it, especially that, for we do that setting every Lent, but the first time we did that, I had a lot of feedback of how positive that was. Do you have thoughts about that? Does it help you, or does it get in your way? Yeah. So there you have the, you know, two, you know, you have, you know, inward thinking, and I don't know what would we call that sense, plus the hearing. And that sort of, that's a good segue into what, let's think now more about, we've talked about several things, but now let's think about, I want you to think about your instrument, or how many of you are, when you play, several of you raised your hands that you played an instrument. So of all of those of you who, and even those who write poetry or paint or whatever, I want you to think about, do you do, like when you play music, do you just play from a score, or do you improvise, and are you looking for new ways, and what has inspired you in that particular medium, whether it's you playing the guitar? If you're not reading a score, what is it? Who said guitar? I'm going to pick on you. Who said guitar? Okay, so if you don't mind, when you play the guitar, do you use a score, or are you playing chords that you've learned and making up stuff, improvising?
I can't read music, so I always play chords that I've either learned before from songs that I knew how to play, or I will play single notes in sequences that sound good, feel good to me.
So you don't just play pieces that you know, do you sometimes just sit there and doodle?
I do, yeah, I do doodle sometimes.
And
yeah.
What, is there something that, is it just, can everybody hear me without the mic? So, is it things that
In other words, what inspires you to doodle? Is it because you're bored, or is it because you're in a happy mood or a down mood, or has something inspired you?
I'm most likely to doodle when I'm in a contemplative space. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Is there anything that inspires you as you're doodling and you're in a contemplative that to try something new? Do any of your other senses come into play?
I can't really do it if I'm stressed out. I need to be in an open space. That's what's right. But as far as other senses that come into play, well, I can't really say that.
Okay. Anybody else? Yes.
Guitar and I would say, you know, what's going on with the other musicians that are playing. So it's really kind of an auditory.
You're inspired by other sounds.
Other sounds, what other musicians mm-hmm. are doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know there were two or three hands. Anybody here?
Yeah, I do the harmonica, mm-hmm. and I do exactly like he does with the guitar. I can't read music, but I hear tunes that I've memorized and just they just come out, but you got to be in it, like he said, contemplative, and can't be uptight, stressed. Mm-hmm. But it's calming to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what? So you said when you're in a contemplative mood, I'm trying to get to the heart of the matter. Let me just give you an example, and I'll come back to you. So I used to find out if I had a shot of Aquavit, and surely people here know what that is, because most people in Texas do not know what Aquavit is. Does everybody know what that is? The best, and you guys who know what it is, correct me, because I have no Scandinavian, I've done the ancestry, but I love Aquavit, but it's a Scandinavian alcohol it's to me, it reminds me sort of like vodka, but it has a strong herbal flavor, and it's got cardamom and I forget what. Caraway, that's it. Caraway, not cardamom. Caraway. And every Scandinavian country has their own variety or version. And so if I would take a shot of Aquavit or scotch or something, I could, you know, I'd get very creative, and I really liked that, but I don't drink much anymore, so I thought, you know, I need to use my real brain. Instead of taking a shot of something that might actually sort of shut down some of my brain, I need to use my brain, and so I started, that was one reason I started thinking of how can I use other senses to affect or inspire me of what to do. So, getting back to you, and you said when you're in a contemplative mood or a quiet mood or what? I heard you say that you played songs that you knew. So do you ever just make up stuff? You know, okay, and is there anything, can you think of put into words what might inspire, like you're tired of playing a melody that you know and you know other people know, but now you're going to do something, what inspires you to do that? Just
like if I play Down in the Valley, then I'll play some, or I'll make up something that's like Down in the Valley, mm-hmm. Valley solo, and with the, you know, the words and remembering the song and things like that, but it's got to be a quiet place when I do it too, or on a beautiful day like today if I'm out in the woods, mm-hmm. that way.
Okay, anybody else? Yes. You've spoken several times without this, and I want to be sure everybody hears you.
Speaking of creativity, many, many years ago, I had been in a car accident, needed a little plastic surgery done in my face, and I sort of came to during the operation. I wasn't out completely, and the doctors had on some classical music and were singing along with it, and all of a sudden I found myself singing along with it too, and I thought, you know, if this helps their creativity as they're repairing my face, this isn't a bad idea at all.
Yeah.
And another thing that suddenly dawned on me too, when I was working for a nonprofit and had an annual audit, we played New Age music. It was the accountant's choice, but it helped us find the things that he was looking for and helped explain it. And I thought, I had never put that together as being a something that was really a wise thing to be doing.
Thank you. Yeah, I play, when I first broke into surgery, that was not the last, but one of the last departments I broke into that they allowed me to come in. I played mostly, I had to gown up, and I played mostly in the corridors where the operating doors opened into. So I was in that area, so I was mostly with staff. I'm just not used to this thing because, as I said, I'm usually either in the hospital or on the organ bench. There were three surgeons now that have come and gotten me and said, one surgeon came and said, I'm stressed out. And of course, I'm glad the patient didn't hear that. But he came and told me, he said, I'm stressed out, and that harp, just hearing you passing by, can you come into the operating room, please? I mean, he didn't ask, he sort of said, come into the operating room with me. So I had to put on a mask. I was all gowned up, but I just didn't have a mask on, so obviously I put that on. And the whole team, you know, said that it calmed them down. And then another time, it was a similar situation. It was an orthopedic surgeon who came to me, and he said, basically he was calm, but he said, my staff, they are stressed out. We have this long surgery. So he said, they may not think this is a good idea, because some of those operating rooms, whether you know it or not, some of the surgeons have blasting rock music going on. And there have been studies that have shown that that the patients who have either silence or calming music, they're not, you know, consciously aware of it, but they come out feeling better than those who have this loud blasting music. And I know there's one surgeon in particular, he's never said anything to me, but I know he's like, oh, I would never have the harp in here, because he wants that stimulation. And so you want your surgeon to be in a good place, but sometimes, you know, you got to think about the patient too. But anyway, I went in there, and his team, he said, I don't know what they're going to think about you being in there, but you're coming in, and we got to calm this down. And so he introduced, you know, they're over there, they were already working. He was the top dog, and of course he had residents that were still in there operating. And he brought me in, and he said, okay, don't be surprised, but this harp is going to start playing, and you guys just need to calm down, and let's see if this will help you. So I don't know what had gone on there, but you could feel the tension in the room. I have no clue if it was something that had gone wrong, or if they were just mad at each, somebody had done something. No, I don't know what it was, but there was tension in that room. It certainly, I think, really helps. But let's get back just for a few minutes. I want to play especially one more piece while you smell one more oil at least, if not a couple. But I still want to be sure everybody, if anybody has any idea or question about how to use a smell or a color or a light or touch to help inspire you to do something creative in another sensory field. Anybody? Yes.
The question is, do you find it necessary to have it like put into a cream and put on the skin, or is it, can I have it in like a put a few drops in a bowl of water in a corner of the room and have it there while I meditate or pray?
Okay, that's a good question, and there's a lot of controversy about that. The more I use the essential oils, the more I want to get back to the plant. There's a lot of thought about how, if you don't know, the essential oil business has just taken off. And it's really, for me and many of us that are aromatherapists, it's a very sad thing because it's turned into big business. And a lot of the oils that say that they are pure oils or that they're therapeutically proven, you know, this is it's all a marketing ploy, and it's absolutely not true. A pure oil that's taken from a plant and distilled properly, that is as pure and as therapeutic as you're gonna get. I started out by just buying oils from very small distillers, and those that had relationships with the people in the world. They traveled all over the world to get the plant material. But now, for example, Palo Santo is a wonderful oil, and that people were saying, well, this is good because we don't have to kill a plant. We're just picking up the dead wood off the forest floor in Ecuador. Well, the thing is, so many people are gathering that dead wood that's supposed to be rotting and creating new loam and soil and all of that kind of thing. And now they're just, you know, collecting this, and it's not going to last forever. You know, it's just like cutting down trees, you know. But this is the thing about this oil was it's dead. We're not hurting anything, because that's what happened to sandalwood. It takes, the tree has to be at least 20 years old before they can get the oil. And so many people across the world wanted Indian sandalwood, and that's why it's so expensive. And that's why you find sandalwood now that's grown in Hawaii and Indonesia and in the Pacific area. It's not quite the same, but it is sandalwood, but it's not quite the same species. But so getting back to your question, the more I use oils and the more that I've worked with especially two people that I highly respect, I think the best way to use the oils, especially for emotional, but I would say physical too, is just by smelling them out of the bottle or putting it onto a little bit on your lip. I still diffuse, and I also have a nebulizer, which is a stronger way of putting it into the air. But especially for emotional and calming and spiritual, I just think the best way is to smell them. As far as putting it on your skin, you know, I'm not going to get into that because there's so many differing opinions on that. But if you have it, you know, if you put a little bit in a diffuser or into a candle with a little cup of a little thing above it where it diffuses, I think the smelling is probably the very best way of using the oils, especially for meditation. And my husband Matthew, he cannot tolerate incense. It gives him a splitting headache. And I used to burn it before I met him, but that's history. But the oils don't bother him because it's, you know, you don't have the other chemicals that are involved, and it's not as potent. But it's, I mean, it's very strong, but it's just different. So, all right. So any more questions before I play another piece? Well, I mean, we haven't really delved into specifics about how these oils, how does smelling one oil make me create a melody? I can't explain that to you. It's just like you can't really explain synesthesia, but I wanted us to have a dialogue to help you start thinking of different ways, and just for me, it happens to be fragrance. But this next one, I'm going to pass around. Oh, where's my Clary Sage, by the way? Okay, as long as I know where it is. And I will talk a little bit more about this track that's on the CD, but this is a rose attar. Now, that means that it's rose that's infused with sandalwood, so it's not just pure rose. Rose is one of the more expensive oils, and you think, why? Because there's roses everywhere. But it takes tons of rose petals to make just a tiny bit. That's why it's so expensive. And of course, they try to get the roses with the most scent. And but this is rose and sandalwood. I didn't mix it. I bought it this way. And please don't spill this because it is so expensive. But it's one of my favorite oils, and I wanted everyone to smell it. So you'll smell the rose, but you'll also notice, what is that other? And maybe I shouldn't have told you what it was, but it is sandalwood. But this next piece, it's called Rose Auto. It's on the CD, and it's the one that I wrote for my mom, and who she just died this last fall of Parkinson's. So this piece, I don't play it a lot at the hospital just because it's very personal to me, but I do play it occasionally. But this rose is, it's just, and I don't know about you, but I remember sitting in church and there was a woman who always wore a very strong rose perfume, and it just was too much. But this is infused with sandalwood, and it's just an incredible oil. It calms me down also, not in the same way as you were asking about Clary Sage and what did I keep by my bedside. I don't keep this by my bedside, but I often smell it before I get in bed because it just exudes love and warmth and tenderness. And especially with the sandalwood, I even prefer this now to the pure rose. But I'm going to start this around, and I will play this piece that was inspired by this oil. And then I thought, okay, this is for my mom. So I think I'll sit down to play this one. Thank you. So that was a piece, as I said, that came to me after smelling the rose. It was not the rose with the sandalwood, but it was just pure, pure rose. So I don't know how it works, and that's why I wanted to hear from all of you and what your experiences were, because I just know that for me, the synesthesia, it works for me. When I smell certain things, it makes my mind think. I don't know if I actually see it in my head. I don't think I do, because I don't ever use a score for the harp, but I just hear a phrase, and then I just sort of develop that theme. And I was that was one of the things I wanted to discuss with you, is how it worked for you, or if I was the only one. I know I'm not the only one, and I was glad to hear from some of you of how. And I hope this gets your mind stimulated. It's kind of odd, because a lot of us, my music, since I'm a therapeutic music a musician, I don't play fast, loud music, even though I like Irish jigs on the harp and that kind of thing. But when I play in the hospital, it's always quiet and contemplative. But at the same time, I want to be stimulated by certain things to inspire me to come up with new ideas. And that was the whole point of this discussion. So before we go, there's a couple of things I would like to ask. First of all, I know you just, let's talk about what you just smelled, since that's fresh in your, what did you think? Tell me, did you like it? Because there are some oils, I almost wanted to pass around spikenard. On my CD, I call it Jadamanzi, because that's the second of the Latin binomial, the second word of spikenard. I forget, right now my mind is blank, but it's something Jadamanzi, and I just think that sounds nicer than spikenard. But that's supposedly the oil that Mary poured on the feet of Jesus is spikenard, and some people really do not like the smell. I should have passed that one around just to see what you thought of it, because there are some oils that are quite pungent, and you don't really necessarily like them until you start realizing how the benefits of it, and then you get to where, okay, this smell is not so strange after all. But what did you think of the rose sandalwood? Somebody, I'm just curious. Pardon? Wait, I can't hear. So delicious. Okay, and what did you say, Joe?
It smells like a garden.
A garden. I really prefer that sandalwood in there now, more than just the straight rose. I don't know, it's just somehow that sandalwood just kind of brings out. Anybody else, any thoughts?
Gentle.
Yeah, it adds something there to it. And how about the clary sage? Can you remember that far back? What'd you think of that? Anybody? Don't be shy.
I love clary sage.
Yeah. Anybody else? So as you were smelling, or can you imagine, do you think that if you smelled an oil and really not just took a whiff of it, but if you sat with it or used it during meditation, do you see a possibility for you that it might help inspire something creative? Like, we've heard a lot of people that use music to inspire. Are there other things? Do you think do you see in the future that might help you be creative in one way or another?
Yeah, well, I've written a lot of curriculum, and I usually have a candle or something, or a diffuser going, and I feel like that helps me to focus a little bit. But also, I just feel like just the sense of smell in general, you know, can bring you someplace, you know, like when you all go home after having not been there for a couple of weeks or however long, there's a smell that is just home, or a fresh jar of Play-Doh, or you know, there are things that smell certain ways, then they take you places. And I think, you know, once you train yourself, or once, speaking for myself, once I train myself to make certain associations with certain essential oils, I think that will become very useful to put myself someplace using those tools.
Thank you.
Something smells like grandma's house.
Yes.
And there are places that...
There are places that it's not necessarily a smell that I could identify and say it's this or that or a combination of things. But once that smell is in my nostrils, it brings back a flood of memories that are associated with grandma's house for one of them.
Yeah. Smell brings back memories, and there's studies on this, and I can't tell you the sources, but I've read them that smell does that more than any other. And one of the reasons I do know, and I won't be able to tell you why, or I mean I can't explain to you the scientific physiological reason, but smell is the only sense that we have that is not filtered. It goes straight to that part of the brain, and that's one. Every other sense that we have has to go to whatever center of the brain and has to be filtered and then put out there. And smell doesn't do that. It goes straight to wherever that center is, and that's one of the reasons it's so potent for us. So I just wanted to once again mention that I do have a CD in the bookstore. And it's on my big harp. It's much more resonant. It's much deeper. It has a really luscious, lovely sound. I'm very pleased with it. If you don't use CDs anymore and you don't, you know, you download, I have cards up here that you can buy, and you can just download it right onto your phone or wherever. Also, I have I will pass these around. This is... this is what I have in the hospital, and it just shows we created this so that nurses and doctors, if they weren't sure about who I am or what I was doing, and this just tells the benefit of therapeutic music, and I just thought I would pass these out, and you can keep it or recycle it or whatever you want to do with it. But it just gives you an idea of therapeutic music. And tomorrow, at the same time, same place, we're going to have a healing service, and we will be anointing with the oils tomorrow, and in the Vespers tomorrow night, actually, we will also be doing something with the oils. We're going to talk about how you can use a healing service at the bedside. And we will actually do that healing service in our session tomorrow. Tomorrow's session is just an hour long. So thank you for coming, and I hope to see you around.